Hi everybody, this is Marty from Groundwork. I've got Richie Andrew here today, who is a mental health improvement specialist from Middlesbrough Council. Hi Richie.
How are you doing? You all right?
I'm good, thanks for coming on the podcast.
Okay.
I guess I'll start by asking how you're doing in lockdown currently. Are you managing okay? Are you coping with all the madness?
Well, me personally, I've been very up and down. I think my situation is working from home. I was actually off work. Very open about my own life. I was actually off work, struggling with my own mental health as lockdown started, from various things in my life, and I needed to get some support for that. So I returned to work under lockdown and working from home. So it was, but actually that suited it quite well, coming back like a sort of phased return to work. And so right from the off, I'm being very open and saying, you know, I might work in a mental health team, but you know, I'm someone who's not, you know. No one's perfect, and you have to deal with your issues when they come along. So
appreciate
that was the first thing. No, that's all right. But yeah, it can be very difficult to motivate yourself sometimes, I think. And I'm one of the lucky ones, so I have held on to my job, and I've been able to work remotely to do that as well. So, but like everyone, most people I know in my bubble, it's like they've experienced ups and downs, and I think it's normal. This is an abnormal situation,
absolutely.
And so it's normal to not be okay, I think, with this, first of all. But yeah, I'm good today. I'm okay today.
Yeah. No, I agree. I think the people I've spoke to on the podcast, it's all that recurring theme, really, that up and down roller coaster of emotion sort of thing. I think a lot of people can identify it. It's very relevant at the moment. Is there anything for you in lockdown that you felt has helped you manage with everything?
Yeah, no problem. I mean, it's weird, isn't it? I think I'd be really interested to know how much more active, you know, the country have been.
Absolutely.
As in, so for me, it's been like running, cycling, the pools. See, I normally do triathlons, so it's like they've all been cancelled. The pools have been closed. Open water swimming wasn't encouraged, but they've started to kick that back off again. So for me, it was running and cycling and being able to do exercises at home. That was the first thing. I genuinely would go mad, I think, without it. I think those days when I couldn't do it or get it in, I'd be a bit more stressed and, you know, even your sleep and your diet choices are all affected by, like, you know, recovering from a run or whatever it would be. So that's been the best thing. And the next thing is connecting with people, staying in touch with friends, with family. Sometimes it's hard to motivate yourself to do that because you sort of think, can I be asked? You know, can I be bothered? I know it sounds weird, but it's like, you know, do I actually feel like I've got the energy to do that? Well, you don't know what you're going to, you could bring someone and it could be extremely demanding. And actually you might think, well, I don't know if I've got that in me today and so on.
Yeah.
So it's an odd thing.
I've never thought of it like that. Yeah, you've got to have your own tolerance there for yourself, like to have that energy within yourself to be able to go and visit a family member or whatever who you know might be also down, and you've got to then try and raise their energy levels with it. And it's
that's it. So that example would be my mum, who can be, she's a bit of a worrier and stuff as well, but she's by herself now.
Right.
Since we lost my old man, and so a lot like sort of support to her, everything from the basics of like, you know, the food shopping and keeping her shielded and all that, all the way through to just catching up with her.
Yeah.
But knowing that's a call sometimes that can be sometimes quite demanding because she's, you know, she's isolated and is missing her usual things. So actually, you've got to make sure I'm in the right state of mind to do that as well. And then there are other times, it's pals have rang me. You know, people have been in touch to see how you're doing and just checking in. Sometimes by text, WhatsApp, up there. So that's great. Yeah. Also creative, like my son's birthday, it was 13th birthday in April under lockdown. So that was like, well, what can we do? So like this, we organised like a Skype surprise party for him with family and some of his family on his mum's side and stuff. And
nice.
We did like a quiz and bingo. So I'd sent like the bingo sheets out to him on email. And I found an app for my tablet that did like bingo calling and everything. And that was it, in a quiz. And we sent people picture cards and showed, you know, played clips from films and stuff. And it was great.
Yeah.
And we got to eat all the cake and not have to share it out either. So win-win. Yeah, totally.
Love it. Win-win. It throws a lot of things at you, the lockdown, that you appreciate a lot more. A little thing.
I was listening to
amazing.
I was listening to an interview with Joe Rogan's podcast.
Oh, yes.
And he was interviewing Bill Burr, who's one of my favourite comedians.
He is good.
He said, "Boss, do you know Bill Burr, yeah?"
Yeah.
So And it's really well worth listening. But if you listen to the last 40 minutes, there's about a 20-minute conversation where he says to Bill Burr how he's been coping with it. And he's like, I thought I knew myself. He thought he'd dealt with all the issues he's got in his life. Mm. Until he had to spend time by himself in under lockdown, not being able to do all the things to audiences he gets so much from.
Right.
And realised that he really hadn't dealt with a lot of stuff. So that time, that's something that probably echoes out there with people. It's like, you probably a lot of people are starting to realise the gaps in the life or their failings or things they wish they'd done or just difficult times they've had in their life that they thought they'd put behind them, that actually when you're by yourself or in this rat cage of an experiment that we sort of found ourselves in, you suddenly find those things start to bubble to the surface, and that can be quite tough.
Sure, yeah, forced to come.
You've experienced traumatic things in your life like I have. It's like, you know, those things need dealing with, and they need dealing with now, because you know that's probably, you know, if you're recognizing that, you need to try and get some you know, people should get some support, some therapy, to start talking about those issues. And I it was fascinating because he has anger and all sorts of, like,
that comes
yeah, well, guy, it comes across in his
it's great though. We can all identify with that.
You wouldn't want to tame him too much, would you?
No,
that's his comedic style, isn't it?
It's
he's quite bitter and all that as well. It's good.
Yeah,
it's how you put a twist on it. But yeah, what is it? Jordan Peterson says you look into the void and it looks back at you.
Yeah,
and that's kind of a bit where people have been, isn't it?
But absolutely, and I think the whole thing is like you say, force people to confront things that they may have been putting off doing. And normally we bottle these away by doing things like, well, going out, having a drink, go to a party, go to see Fred, you know, that constantly, or working. Like, you, what a big portion of your day that you actually that place and not in your own head.
That's right.
So hopefully, like, there's obviously we're going to have people that have suffered with it, but say Bill Burr confronting that and reaching a new level of, like, handling for themselves and things.
He said himself he'd access therapy. He'd start accessing therapy again. And it was too, like, parent issues from being a kid, basically. It was like, I think it sounded like stern parenting. He hadn't got the love. He hadn't had very loving sort of parents that, you know, kind of would give reassurance or provide, or certainly, you know, give, I suppose, just those simple things like hugs and kind of, you know, praise and that sort of stuff that perhaps wasn't seen as very masculine, but it's kind of, you know, all this stuff's bubbled up to the surface.
Yeah.
I'm sure he'll make a new, whole new stand-up routine out of it as well.
Around it, yeah.
But, I mean, for some people, it's like, you know, reading some of the research that's coming out so far and understanding the impact of this. And I've got to say, my personal opinion, although I know, and it's based on the evidence I've read, is that lockdown itself feels like one big huge social experiment that's just gone horribly wrong. Yeah. And I know that it's something that seems necessary, and that's it is what it is. But there's side effects to anything, isn't there?
Yeah.
And, you know, you look at those experiments of, like, you know, when they isolate rats by themselves and so on, how depressed rats get and lose their appetite and you know, almost like their will to live.
Yes.
Actually, that's exactly where we find ourselves. Mm-hmm. Now, for some people have had social anxiety. They're well prepared for lockdown. Actually, that's kind of, it means they don't have to expose it, but that might have repercussions when they come back out of lockdown and they have to then become comfortable with those coping mechanisms of, you know, of getting through life normally. So that's quite tough. And for, I mean, that's without even getting into, like, employment for a lot of people, being furloughed, having to pay their salaries, you know, and this thing, you know, having to pay their bills and so on. Mm. And it's incredible. I mean, actually, I'm not in that position, but I have been in that position in my life.
Mm.
I have been absolutely at the lowest point, and I know how it feels. I know the anxiety.
Mm.
I didn't call it anxiety at the time, but that heart rate and that constant awareness and that constant, like, on your guard and basically just wondering what the hell the next day is going to look like.
Yeah.
That's a horrendous place to be in life.
Mm.
And to know that a lot more people, huge numbers of people across the country in that position, it's horrendous, isn't it? It really isn't.
Yeah. It's tragic, you know, but I think hopefully, I think for a lot of people that are maybe experiencing these feelings and have come out because of lockdown, that they might be more appreciated of the people that have suffered before.
Great.
Mental health issues. I mean, I could be wrong. I mean, I'm really hopeful that things will change and we can learn from it. Remains to be seen, I guess. Right?
Yeah. Well, don't get me wrong, there's huge amounts of positives to basically people. I mean, some of the things that people have done, it's not like it's not like the lockdown came and then the government said, right, you've all got to try and find things to keep yourself busy, or as you know, it's going to affect your mental health. But they kind of did, in a way. I think a lot of people realized that themselves. What are you going to do? You know, you're just going to sit there and stare at a wall, watch Netflix box sets, you know, for months and months. I mean, it might work for the first week or two, but then that soon becomes a bit of a grind itself, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And so it's amazing all the stories of how people, like you said, people getting physically active and doing things in their life, like organizing group chats on Zoom. I mean, I just thought that was the first thing, that people just found really novel ways of staying connected.
No.
There's a lot of work for us to do in the future just to make sure that more people are connected, who are a bit more isolated in life, because there's been a lot of things that have happened that people are like, oh, we can't make that happen quickly, blah, blah, but under lockdown, things have had to happen. And so we've shown that actually we can make those things happen if we need them to.
Absolutely.
So there's a lot of positives there, I think.
But yeah, a great advice to like go back to the physical activity and having that release of energy, I think, is really important. I think it raises your tolerance for what we're currently in. I think getting out and running, and there's some fantastic apps out there, if like Couch to 5K, which is, I know it's got a lot of people engaging to running and stuff. It's important.
I mean, at the very minimum, it's like, you know, we look at kind of well-being, how you look after yourself and being active. It doesn't really matter if you're out for a walk or if you're out for a run, or, you know, you're trying to do 25 mile an hour for an hour on your bike, whatever extreme you're at, whatever level you're at, it doesn't really matter. But getting out, having a walk about, not a lot of people do much walking. And I just think, like, you know, when you go out walking in an area, you notice things that you don't notice if you're in the car, if you're on the bus. And so just getting out on foot, you know, you find there's little mini adventures to be had everywhere, and that's probably a good way to think about it, really.
Yeah, absolutely.
But yeah, I mean, there's, yeah, and actually that potentially being able to give back as well. I think there's been a sense of solidarity of the country as well.
Yes.
I don't mean just standing outside your house and clapping, but you know, it's kind of the idea that there was the amount of volunteers. Middlesbrough, I think, was one of the highest levels, highest numbers of volunteers that came forward to the hubs to help out as well. And so there were times when volunteers, you know, from the phone call, from the phone hubs and so on, were being sent back because there was too many, you know.
Wow.
And in terms of like getting the food parcels out there as well, again, it's back to what I think what you and I have spoken about before, about volunteers, and there's not more people willing to volunteer. They just need to be directed in the right way. It's just a great way. I mean, I'm involved in a triathlon club. I never mention I do triathlons.
No, I didn't.
Yeah. No, I never mention it. But I'm involved with that at the moment, and I'm sort of involved in a couple of bits and pieces. And you just give what you can, and it's kind of find something that you're interested in with like-minded people, and it won't even feel like an effort, you know, but there's a lot to get out of it for yourself, really.
It makes you appreciate, and we're all social creatures, you know what I mean? Like, I know people are like loners and stuff, but
We're hardwired for it. There's no doubt whatsoever. Yeah. I think a lot of people have been brought closer to death as a result of this, okay? Mm. And we should never fear talking about death and the difficult things in life, the vulnerabilities. But when you do that, it does make people a bit more inward looking. But we are hardwired to make our lives better when we look at ourselves. We're well set for it, to identify the problems we've got and to do stuff about it. Motivation and the means to do it is often the problem within society. So if you're a young person, you need to get, let's say, if you're a young person and you know you haven't got your driving license, that's going to cost you money to get your license, to get your lessons. A job might require that you have a car, or just access to getting to the place you need to do that job requires having a car. That immediately is a privilege. Like, my old man paid for my driving lessons. He saw it as something that he wanted to do for me. To set it up a little bit. And I think he never bought a car or anything like that. Some have it bought for them. Some never have any privileges like that. So it's like, well, you know, this is where we have sort of inequalities in society that
have been
shown to be even, you know, like more black men, for example, have died from coronavirus than other groups, do you know what I mean? But like, we've always known that men's health, in terms of like health outcomes for preventable illnesses, so whether it's diabetes or COPD or whatever it could be, that men will contract diseases younger and die younger and live with it longer, if that makes sense as well. So it didn't really come as a surprise to me when I saw that more men had been affected, you know. So it's like, well, so what I'm trying to say is that there's certain things we have choices about, and certain things we don't, but as a society, there are things we can do to remove some of those barriers. And we don't even fully, I mean, we don't understand, by the way. No, it doesn't seem to be have a handle on understanding why some groups have been more susceptible to the virus than others. But we might be looking at it through the wrong end of the telescope, actually. That, you know, it might have absolutely zero, it might have zero to do with biology, for example. It might be something to do more with the choices that men make, or the fact that they're more risk-taking by the very nature. There's a whole range of things underneath that that could explain it that we don't fully understand.
A lot of unknowns, and I think that's part of the problem, isn't it? It's
definitely
public information that really changes, by the way, when you look at the different way countries are handling it, like in America about the mandatory face masks and things like that. And we obviously don't have that, I think, as we stand, we don't have that as a... But like you say, it comes out about the asymptomatic carriers. So really, everyone should be face masked going into public spaces if that is what the evidence has shown. It's hard.
And you said it yourself. I mean, it's sort of the unknown, isn't it? And we have to sort of put trust in those to make those decisions. And you know, we transfer some of our agency in life. And I mean, lockdown. You know, it's nothing anyone would have us. Would have predicted it was going to happen at any point. Who knew this is where we're going to be this year? Not easy. And the last thing I would say on it is that people need to be. I think I've had a lot of conversations with people where I've said, you know what, you need to go a lot easier on yourself because this is a completely abnormal situation. So if you're feeling out of sorts way more regularly than you would do normally, have a look around you, realize why that is. And I'm not saying, oh, don't worry about it because everyone else is suffering the same thing. Just realize that you're having an abnormal reaction to an abnormal problem, a normal reaction to an abnormal problem, you know, which is a struggle. So it is what it is, you know, that's where we're at, basically. The Every Mind Matters Public Health England campaign, which was launched last year, well before any of this started, was all about raising awareness of mental well-being and what people can do in their own lives to protect themselves from developing a mental health problem, but equally just to stay mentally well, which is a bit like physically well. It's like going for a run to keep your heart in check and so on. To keep your health. It's the same principle. You do things in your life that we know will keep you happy. But we are hardwired for it. We sort of know what we need to do. And it's just a case of motivating. But there was specific advice about children, young people, and listening to them, you know, understanding that actually has a huge impact on there, because young people generally, you know, might be very sociable, stay connected, but actually there's a, you know, the routines are absolutely shot at the moment. And that's something that young people rely on to know where they're at in life, you know, and to have that sense of normality. So they're as affected, if not more affected, by what's going on. I know that my son got upset one weekend. I think it had been building up about, he's actually missing school, missing his friends and that regular contact. And we have to have a chat with him about that. But he felt open enough to be able to share that. And it was getting on top of him. He was getting stressed out and stuff, and had a good chat about it. It's fine. It's okay. Let's get it out. Have a good chat about it, you know.
Really good. So could you tell us a little bit about your daily role in your organisation, what your priorities are with your line of work?
Broadly speaking, public health is about improving the health of the nation, improving and protecting the health of the nation. So we've heard a lot more about public health of recent, of course, for good, for bad, whatever. But ultimately, I work in a public health team which covers South Tees, so the Middlesbrough and Redcar area. The team I'm in is mental health. And what we're looking at is basically if we succeed in our jobs completely and constantly, we would have everyone that lives in our area would be aware of mental health. So everyone would have training to a certain degree and be aware of mental health. They would know that that mental health is something that can be supported, that support is out there, is available, and they would know how to access that. And they'd know how to support their friends who were experiencing mental health problems as well. The second part of that is mental well-being. And so I mentioned earlier on, you know, again, if we were to be entirely successful in our jobs, we would have no suicides locally, because people would get support when they needed it. And they'd be enabled to live the lives and have those, like I mentioned earlier on, those opportunities, the means to do the things to move forward in life as well. And so more people be aware of the well-being, what we know about well-being, like the five ways to well-being, like I mentioned earlier, about being active, you know, to give and be, you know, and so on. And ultimately, we'd have less people suffering with mental health problems. We'd have more people being aware of mental well-being, what's good for your mental health, and understanding that it's exactly the same relationship we have with physical health. So, if you experience some pain in some way, you go to your GP. They diagnose it. They say, you put trust in them to take their advice and be referred on and have it treated, whatever it might be. But with mental health, it's different. It's very sometimes hard to recognise in yourself if you don't have that knowledge. So the more people who've got that awareness, the better we can have. But ultimately, we want less people to suffer because a lot of mental health problems are preventable, 100%. And people end up with all sorts of dire consequences. And, it could be addictions. Drugs and alcohol by themselves aren't necessarily the problem, but the relationships we have with them. So most of us will enjoy a drink, but most of us aren't alcoholics. And most of us aren't drinking other than to be sociable. We might, rather than take away emotional pain and so on. So that's I work in a team that has, we work strategically locally to look at kind of how we can have an impact on all those things as well. So whether it's through training, whether it's through campaigns, health campaigns for people, whether it's through making sure that services, people aware of services, it's about awareness, huge part of it as well. That's what I do.
Yeah, no small task, but yeah, it's good to know that.
Definitely
not. Yeah, it's good to know that there are people out there trying to force that issue on people and trying to get to confront those things.
It's changed a lot, though, hasn't it? Yeah, I mean, I was in the NHS 10 years. I've been over here 6 years, so 16 years on this type of work in health improvement. And the amount of awareness that's out there about mental health is huge now. You can talk about it quite comfortably, I think.
Right.
That's phenomenal. I mean, there might be a negative. There's usually always a negative effect to it. Like you said earlier on, young people might think they've got anxiety or experiencing depression when they're just struggling in life. Actually, that's got underneath the things that are causing you stress, that are actually making you feel a bit down, that you don't want to tackle. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes putting a name to it isn't always the best thing, because we don't want to diagnose people, do we? But ultimately, life's tough, isn't it? And it's like, we want to help people get through it, basically, without suffering too much. But like I said, the most brutal end of all that is suicide. And it's not necessarily that people want to kill themselves. It's absolutely clear about suicide. It's just that they don't feel they can cope with the things that are going on. And so that tells you a lot, doesn't it, about kind of how to tackle that as an issue.
Yeah, getting the awareness out there of how to cope, literally, it really is about coping.
Yeah, what's available to people. And actually, I mean, I've been to a very low part in my life when I was young. Mm-hmm. I was isolated in a rubbishy little flat in a horrible area, and had a crack dealer living next door to me, and all sorts of threatening things on a daily basis that just would make my life miserable, and financially, and I know how low you can get. And so it was actually help of other people close to me that helped to pull me out of that situation, and then me taking some responsibility for making use of those opportunities when they came along as well. But it's tough. I mean, life generally is tough, and we live in an area which has higher levels of unemployment and has had industry decline, and hopefully more opportunities in the future in industry, in the new types of industries, can actually help to reverse some of that as well. But yeah, it's tough.
What's some of your challenges in your role, Rich? What's some of the biggest challenges you think in getting the message out there at the moment?
We don't get a great deal of funding in our team. Right. And the public health budget is being cut massively. I'm not going to make any bones about it, even in my paid time. Austerity is absolutely... public health has been a big victim of austerity, basically, from the government. So thankfully, the work of the voluntary sector has done a lot to keep the movement momentum going around mental health, mental well-being. So mental health is the underfunded, it's the poor relation, I'm afraid, in the NHS. I need to shed load more funding spending on it, because there's some of the big reports have shown, we have therapy, you can get NHS therapy free, improving access to psychological therapies in Teesside. The service is called Impact on Teesside, so you can go on Impact on Teesside.co.uk, I think it is, or just Google it, and you can self-refer to therapy. 10 years ago, it didn't exist, I don't think, 10 years. But there was a report in 2004 that made all that happen. Right. But we could do with a whole lot more of it, because there's still waiting lists, and there's still kind of different ways that you need to develop to get people to access them. imagine being 18-year-old and to cough up your life to a therapist who you've only just met, you know.
Yeah.
As a 42-year-old, it's uncomfortable.
Absolutely.
And it's made easier on the phone, weirdly, but for me personally, but it'd be, if I was 18, 19, share all that, I wouldn't have. It's tough, man, wasn't it? Right? Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Like, and you don't even know yourself, do you? An 18-year-old, like, you don't know what triggers you. You don't know what you want out of life. And, yeah, you are incredibly self-conscious.
Yeah, that's it. So you're not comfortable with all your vulnerabilities. You don't want to show what you think is your weaknesses. And I think just getting young people to access services, most services would say, look, we could just do with a whole lot more money, so we could just provide a whole lot more service, really. Mm. And you probably say the same yourself. You know, you see good work going on and you think, God, wouldn't it be great if we just could scale that up and just do a whole lot more of it? But actually, the other challenge we've got is getting as many people, many community groups, whether you're a triathlon or a sport or a running club, all the way up to like a kids drama group or, you know, recording music, whatever it could be that you're doing to enjoy your life. To get those types of activities to build well-being into it as part of it, so actually that everyone builds up an awareness. So we want to sort of build like an army of sort of people who are mental health aware and are mental well-being aware, and how they can support people around them. And so that's the biggest challenge, is to get our messages out to as many people as we can. So that's why we do a lot of training with people that work with people to improve their lives, to try and get them more aware. So that's a huge challenge, basically, because we have a training hub in Tees, but there's only so much money, it's only limited numbers of people can go through the training. So again, we could do a load more of that, and that people would be there queuing up to do it as well. So a big amount of the challenge is funding and how seriously mental health is taken to give it the funding that it needs. That's probably the biggest challenge, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah, that's excellent. Could you tell us how you managed to get into your current role, or journey from, you know, getting into where you want to be in life?
That's a really good question, and what I'm sort of quite proud of, actually, because it's no problem going through the academic role. If you go to college, you go to university, you know, you learn your theory and you go and do the job, basically. And I work with a number of people who have done that route. That wasn't my routine, and they bring something to the table as much as I do. But my routine was my biggest break, really. I got a job working in a training company that was training young people in things like construction and hands-on type of work like that, like trades type roles. And they were paying them for 6 months on what would be now sort of minimum wage while they were learning that. And I was like, I got a job there doing, it was called employee liaison. And it was just, I was encouraged to apply for it because I think people thought it was probably a reasonable communicator. It was probably a good opportunity. Anyway, I got the job somehow, as you do. And that really ended up, I saw a job for a community worker. This is the big one. It was a community development worker in West Middlesbrough, where I was actually living at the time. So it was a New Deal communities area. And I got a job there as a community worker, and it was a game changer for me because it would be everything from knocking doors, listening to people's stories, finding out how they wanted to get involved in the community, and then setting up activities, but pulling together funding. And I just learned huge amount in that job. It was just fantastic about, you know, taking through people through development and working with groups and stuff. And then there was a job, I did some health projects through that. This is in my early 20s, and I got a phone call to say, we're looking at this community health development team within NHS, would you be keen to apply, to put an application in? So I was like, well, absolutely, because I'd seen a couple of the health projects I'd done. So I applied, and that was in the NHS in health improvement. And that was it. And so, I'd been through YTS schemes, young person training. I'd done everything from like business administration to screen printing.
Wow.
And we used to just doss about chucking paint stuff all over. It was a nightmare. I mean, as a young person, a lot of problems. I left school left home quite young, and used to go like clubbing and all this sort of stuff. Anyway, and I was well into that scene. And it really sort of made things quite difficult. But it was, went back to college. That was a big one. I went back to college, did a couple more on the GCSEs again. Well, I'd done okay, but actually there was a couple of key ones that I just had messed about. And anyway, I went back and did those in a year. And that was a bit of a game changer as well. But ultimately, I think just keeping an open mind, and just the opportunities seemed to follow. And I went with it. And then I've never really looked back. I've been doing this 16 years. Mm-hmm. And so obviously since then I've been on and done other courses and so on and developed and still am. And I'm starting a new course for this public health registration thing, which is, I would never have dreamed I'd be doing this sort of 20 years ago. And there was a point, but it was being encouraged to apply for something that I didn't think, I would have looked at it and gone, I wouldn't do that, you know, but someone else recognised, well, have a go, why not, you know, it's got potential in there, they might see it, and I think they probably did, so.
Well, it's perfect, really, because I don't think anyone's had a straight line career trajectory. It's, you know, you bounce around, you do some jobs, you find some that you don't like, some that you do like, and one of the things you're saying, like, doing your best there in a role that you enjoyed open doors for you that naturally you wouldn't have necessarily looked at. Our young people, rightly perhaps, are maybe it's quite choosy in terms of certain jobs that they want to get involved in. Like, you know, it's understandable. You want to try and get to somewhere that you want to enjoy straight away and all that sort of thing. But 9 times out of 10, you go to where the money is. You do a bit of a work job there, and that then snowballs into something else. And it's all a learning experience, isn't it? Everything, those roles that you've done there, like you said, business admin and stuff, those are skills that just are so easily transferable.
That's right. And that's true. That did happen. Mm-hmm. Like the community, that's what I said, the community work a job I did. Like, you could do that type of thing voluntarily. You know, you can get involved in any type of community group. Mm-hmm. But I was just so fortunate to be able to knock on doors. The job was, part of it was to knock on doors, speak to people in the community, find out because we had a load of money to spend, this new deal for communities money. Mm-hmm. But people had to be involved in it and part of the development themselves. Absolutely. You know, that's how you get things to work long-term in a community. Mm-hmm. Some things worked, some things didn't. But ultimately, it was just, I found out about all these different services, from domestic abuse to mental health to helping people into housing, into education and into work. And I just completely opened my eyes to, you know, all the supports that are out there that I hadn't realised. And so I think then it also played to my, I have a sort of predisposition for enjoying work that's involved in helping people basically move forward in life. And that's a huge motivator for me. I don't know why I haven't quite got, I'm not going to overthink that one, but ultimately I definitely get something from seeing people progress. Probably because of my own experience, like realising that I was helped a lot. That job, I had a great boss, Paul Wales. I'd always tell him anyway, but he's but he was tremendous and saw the opportunity, you know, saw the potential, and it was really helpful in the career. So you rely on being surrounding yourself with good people as well.
Absolutely.
And relying on that as well.
Yeah, I can identify with that, absolutely. That feeling, you probably hit the nail on the head there, like helping your younger self, like you've been there, you've experienced it. You want to give yourself your younger self in the past, I think, that opportunity.
That's right. Middle name, altruism.
Yeah, I guess so, yeah.
That thing about giving that you, altruism is giving without getting anything back, right?
Anything back, absolutely.
So, I'm not even sure that's even, like, I would question that even, because if you are giving, you are, it's part of well-being, you know, you are getting something back. I don't think there's anything wrong with that, especially if it plays to the strengths, to your own strengths, that you enjoy that. Mm. So it makes you better at it, makes you more passionate about it, it makes you genuine, authentic at what you're doing, you know. There is help out there, isn't it? And I did, like, it's not like you would just, but you, most people at some point, if they find a good mentor, I mean, a mentor can be good or bad, you know, like you could be in a state where, when I was living in that flat and there was a crack dealer next door, who was threatening me and stuff like this. Because I spoke to his girlfriend in the street, by the way. That was it. That was the trigger.
Wow.
I know. She said, hello, welcome to the neighbourhood, you know. And she was quite canny, actually. And he didn't like that. And that was it. He wanted to try and kill me, I think. But he knew my name, but he never knew what I looked like. So, you know, I used that against him. I convinced him I was one of my own friends. Anyway, but that could have been a different conversation. He said, oh, look, going to make some money.
Sure.
You know, and I, you know, he might have seen me struggling with, you know, my gas card or something that I couldn't fill up every day or whatever. Mm. And he said, oh, do you want to make an extra few, you know, and then the next thing you know, making money, you know, and it's kind of like, so he's a mentor for basically selling drugs.
Yes.
And it's like, and I'm, you know, plenty of cash in, but not, I'm young. I'm not thinking about the fact that, you know, I'm not paying taxes. I'm not kind of, paying into a mortgage. I'm not doing anything really towards building a future for myself. Mm. All I'm doing is just seeing cash coming in and just constantly running the risk of having my life completely turned upside down forever. Yes. Because I get caught doing illegal and damaging activity. So yeah. It's like, yeah, I mean, pick your mentor well, I think is one of those things as well, isn't it?
Massively, yeah. I mean, I've lost and gained a lot of friends. You outgrow people. Like, when you're younger, you want people drinking and getting in all sorts of trouble and stuff. And
that's
fine. Like, you know, I think that's building as well, isn't it? Like,
it's hard to do that. It's really quite tough sometimes.
Yeah.
It is. I remember chatting to a friend not so long ago who was having some troubles with a child. An older child, actually. I mean, probably old enough to not describe as a child anymore at all, but it was on the face of it, it was to do with like drug use and hanging around with the wrong people. And actually it was a drug problem, and it did deal with the drug problem. And I was like, do you though? Actually, why are they doing that? Because often services like for addictions and so on would go, well, like I said earlier on, why do people use drugs? And I said, and actually that person identified that there'd been something happen at a similar time that started doing that, smoking weed. And it was like, there was that experienced bereavement. And it's like, well, actually, hold on. Have they been able to talk about it? You know, is there actually something they've had access to that's even going to vaguely help them? It would have only been a friend, wouldn't it, that would have said, oh, look, if you're struggling, you know, try it, you know, have a quick joint, chill yourself out a little bit and blah, blah. But actually, there's a whole separate, whole roll of other things that might happen there, which have nothing to do with that. I'm not advocating drugs. I'm not either way, good or bad. But what I'm saying is that you've got to look sometimes a bit further behind that.
Absolutely.
I mean, any parent can do it. I mean, but it's bloody hard. I mean, you've got to have an open relationship with your children, first of all, so they trust they can share stuff with you. You're not going to kick them out. You're not going to judge them or just try and chuck you into a drug service when actually that young person themselves might know they haven't got a drug problem. What they've got is an emotional problem that they just don't know. They're just struggling. They're experiencing anxiety. They don't even know what it is.
Yes.
They just haven't, but they don't know how to share it without it being the drug being a barrier to having that conversation. So that's the kind of the world I'd like to see we can get to.
It's a grassroots thing that you need to tackle. Like,
well, keeping learning is part of well-being. So there's a lot of evidence to say that it could be anything. That could be reading a book about a particular topic. It could be fictional even, but you're learning, you're doing something which is engaging your brain with new information. And that's a huge impact. There's a whole stack of evidence about that.
Mm-hmm.
And so you've got to, I think with young people, you probably validate. I'll give you an example, right? So my son has developed a love of PlayStation as a result from me.
Of course.
Playing PlayStation around him, right? So, and I took him to Rome last year. It was like a bit of a day do, but he'd played an Assassin's Creed game, right? Which had all this, which interjected with the story itself wrapped around loads of real history.
Right.
So he'd actually learned about different areas. I want you to tell me what we're going to do in Rome, what place you want to go and see and why, basically. Right. And I didn't make him do a bloody 2,000 word essay on it or anything. But come up with a list and just tell me why you want to see those places.
Yeah.
And a lot of it was based on what he'd learned in the game, and I thought valid, totally valid. I don't really care. And he'd gone down the rabbit hole on YouTube, and that's really quite important, do you know what I mean? Yeah. But again, it's where I think the internet can be a really super positive thing, and even gaming, everything has its positives and negatives, so it's grey area again, right? Everything's grey, nothing's black and white. Social media, you know, the relationship with that as well, so it's good, well, it has its bad.
Yeah, everything has it, like any virtues can be, a vice essentially.
I put trust in my son we haven't had to check him very much in terms of, again, having a good routine is obviously really important, but, you know, I'm sure he probably would play on the PlayStation more if we let him, but he doesn't seem to have any problem knowing from the start how much time we'd expect him to play on it and then to do other things as well. And so you put the responsibility back in their hands. So young people are far smarter than often they're given credit for. They usually know their own answers. You know, they know themselves sometimes better than adults do. If you give them the freedom with all the pals to make their own, you know, just to go completely freely and make their own decisions. They might not always make the right decisions, but that's what we were when we were kids, you know, it's part of it. So for me, it's always like about a healthy balance and trusting them. But given, I mean, obviously, if you're a parent, you have to give your kids boundaries. We all like boundaries. You know, it gives us something to work to. That's what I said about routine. We set out, it's just when you're older, you have to set your own boundaries.
Yeah.
That's motivation. That can be quite hard. You've got to crack the whip on yourself is a hell of a thing. Far easier to give other people advice, isn't it, than it is sometimes to take your own advice.
Always, yeah.
And again, it's like, you know, imperfect, you know, make mistakes, keep learning from it, keep trying to be better and do those things. But a healthy relationship with it, I think, is a tough one. They call it accurate. There's a lot of the apps and stuff that you get on phones, social media and so, they're all built on techniques which are designed to make you addicted.
A dopamine.
And this book, exactly. A reward center of the brain, right? So, there's nothing new in that. There's books written on it, California published and so on, you know, designed for that industry to make your app more addictive than the next one. But then I heard a term called the attention economy. So that's what we're built around now. The digital economy is built around attention. So our attention is being traded on. So the longer I can keep you, watching a certain website, the more likely you are to see certain more adverts, and every time you click on one of those, there's more income generated. You know, and Facebook is absolutely based on that, is the extreme of that model. You know, the longer you are on Facebook, the more likely you'll see the newsfeed, the adverts and all that stuff. I remember when Facebook used to, on the mobile version, didn't have any ads, and they realized that they had to add ads in there somehow, because that's what, you know, otherwise their businesses weren't buying advertising and all that stuff. So it's called the attention economy, and that tells you everything you need to know, doesn't it? That you need to, you know, regulate your own attention, basically.
So, I think that's what is something that is needs to be more public, more aware of at a younger age, because it is so easy to get caught up in that. It really is. It's I read a book. I think it's just called How to Break Up with Your Phone or something like that. It's by Catherine Price. And it's just How to Break Up with Your Phone. But again, it's not it's not an extreme. It's not like give up your phone, don't go on Facebook. It's like,
absolutely,
it's really brilliant the way it's structured. It's like the first half of the book is like, this is what it's doing to you. This is what it's doing to people's brains and things like that, and the research, and which is terrifying. It is absolutely terrifying. Like, and it goes through a lot of the things about that dopamine rush and stuff. Like, you know, that them app notifications that you come on, they're designed to just keep perfectly within that, you know, that bell addiction.
That's it.
And you might think it's perfectly innocent, but, you know, doing things like turning off that notification, gives back some of that attention span that we're all is getting shorter and shorter and shorter, because we've got such an instant entertainment at hand. And one of the things that was, I thought was quite tragic, was one of the studies that they pulled up is that young people are learning to drive a lot later in life. They're like going out and not it's socializing in the way that they used to. They don't drink as much as what they used to. Like, it's all like, which might be a good thing necessarily, but I think it's part of growing up. Like, it's all things we used to do when we were young, they're now taken for granted. Like, just going and physically seeing people.
Yeah.
The way they keep in touch is through your phone. It's like, it's scary that, you know, it's a bit like knocking on doors and going and meeting people. It's, those are so important to be able to get back.
Which was terrifying for me at the time. I think I was 20 or 21, you know, working low, knocking on doors just to talk to people about things that was basically an open conversation. You're like, that's, you know, I learned quickly there, Jesus. But How do you give someone the skills to have a healthy balance with that? That's quite a lot of input, doesn't it? Like, and it probably sometimes needs, if it's only you to check yourself, the chances are slim, aren't they, that you're going to, unless you really are motivated to understand why it's bad to do that too much. You have roots. See, that's the first thing you've got to understand. That's probably why that book starts off with that chapter about that. This is actually, if you were to sit in a room and spend all your waking time on social media, for example, what does it do to your brain, you know?
Yeah.
Like I said, those dopamine triggers, and when you take that away, that's the very nature of addiction, is that it's something that the body has become accustomed to, has a negative effect on it. You know, if you suddenly take it away, that's a dependency.
Yeah.
So that's when it is. Yeah, that's all. In fact, I might just have experiment on my son this week. Just take his phone away. Why? Oh, Look, I'm telling you, I'm not having it for a week. See what happens, you know. Boom, there'll be fireworks, I tell you.
Yeah.
And probably rightly so. He's got a pretty healthy relationship with it as well, I think.
Well, that's what it's all about, isn't it? Have a healthy balance with it. That's what.
Yeah.
You can't withdraw that. It's totally, I don't think it's that healthy in itself. No. Is there any advice you would give to young people to make progress once they're actually in work?
Be inquisitive. Don't be afraid to ask questions, that's for sure. Be curious about kind of what's going on, the whys, the, you know, make suggestions as well based on that. Don't be afraid to, you know, really push yourself out of your comfort zone, but be curious, be, you know, try to learn and find a mentor who knows it, and surround yourself with good people. Recognize that in the workplace there's toxic people, there's people who would drag you back down, and obviously recognize and, you know, don't associate yourself with those. Associate yourself with people who are going to allow you to move forward. So surround yourself with good people and remain curious and be open to constantly learning, and don't be afraid to put your hands up to admit that you made a mistake or that you don't know something, because that's the opportunities that you genuinely will miss out on the most. I think, as I say, I sort of get the feeling that for some reason that's probably one of our biggest faults, that we absolutely, especially like, look at Twitter, how that black and white kind of response that you get to people saying something that might be wrong, and you get absolutely lambasted for it. You get hammered for it, don't you? Yeah. And it's like, wow, that's how we celebrate. The idea of politicians doing a U-turn if they've had new information, I've never had a problem with that. Never. Like, you know, change your mind on something if you discover new information about it. But yeah, be curious, keep learning, and surround yourself with good people. How's that?
Great advice, mate. Really, really good advice. Fully agree. Excellent. We are asking people to recommend a favourite film or TV show or anything that they're currently enjoying in lockdown. Have you got anything you would recommend?
I finished. I watched Mr. Robot. Have you heard of that?
The
last season was released. I think it finished up in about February. I think it's February, March, just before lockdown it finished. It was absolutely tremendous, but probably not for the faint-hearted. I wouldn't have thought. It's about a computer hacker and the world he gets into, but I like, you know, it's conspiracy stuff and all that. It's really good. But do you mean in terms of the topic that we're talking about as well, or just
really either you could go for that as well. It's entirely.
Yeah. You're gonna
go for it. Just as many as you want.
I know. Well, okay. I'll. The books that have had the biggest influence on me over the last couple of years.
Okay.
There's one by a guy, and I need to read more because I went through a year of reading a load, and then something stopped, so I'm trying to get back on top of it. But I usually have about 6 books on the go at once. But there was a book called Selfie by Will Storr, S-T-O-R-R. That was on the bestseller list for a while. That's all about the Western, our relationships with ourselves, basically. It's a very interesting book. Okay. Talks about digital self and all this kind of bit of things we were talking about there. There's a book called 12 Rules for Life by Jordan Peterson, which is really good. He's on YouTube and so on. What was the other one? Oh, yeah, Sapiens, which is a really good book about the history of
humans. I bought this the other day on ebook. I'm looking forward to reading
it. That's good. Lend you the copy I've got there. But there's one called Homo Deus as well, which is a sequel to it, about the likely future as well, which is quite kind of good. Yeah. And then podcasts, I'm about Joe Rogan basically, and we've got our own podcast called Under the Burman Can Campaign.
Yes,
Three Wise Fools.
Do you want to tell us a little bit about Burman Can and how that came to be and what you guys are doing at the moment?
Burman Can is a campaign for all men and young men that's basically about telling the stories of men who have made improvements to their life and has improved their health and how they've done it, to inspire other men to do the same. That's the premise of the campaign. So if you go on burramancan.co.uk, you'll find on there videos, written stories, case studies, and then links to the services that they found help them as well. So the key thing is men telling a story, what it was about, and actually who helped pull them through it. You never do it by yourself, right? You never do it by yourself. So, and then we've got this podcast called Three Wise Fools, which is myself, one of our men's health champions, and a guy who runs local radio station who do that. And we just usually interview someone on it, talk about their experience and have a bit of a laugh about men's, because it's like pub talk and, you know, blimey, do we need more laughs at the moment? Do we?
Yeah, absolutely, mate. It's really good.
So that's the whole point of the campaign, and trying to inspire people to focus on men's health a little bit more, which is kind of weird in the current climate, where we do talk about gender, and gender politics is oof, there's a whole range of views on that as well. So,
it's important, like you were saying, you've got to have these conversations to make any changes and things like that.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely do. But yeah, great. I mean, the weird thing is, I'm a massive film fan, and the idea that I can't, you know, I'll just the same problem is I'll be here all day. You have to say what genre,
okay,
what subgenre. I'll be here all day talking about films. But yeah,
have you seen recently then that you really enjoyed film wise?
A recent.
Mm.
Do you know what? Just completely randomly, I'm going to chuck it out there. I'm very much looking forward to seeing the new. I can't remember the name of it. Christopher Nolan. Mm. Looking forward to seeing that.
Yeah.
But that film I'm watching in the cinema, that's probably a good one, was The Invisible Man, the new one.
Right.
They put it out on, but actually, it was really good. Like, I remember Hollow Man, which was a bit weak.
Yeah.
Like, which is like, but this is like a new take on it, and it's I won't spoil it, but it's really good.
Yeah, I've heard
it really was.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was creepy. I mean, really genuinely creepy, but it pushed on a few topics that I think most people can relate to, which is like all know people, domestic violence sort of thing. So it's quite it's brutal, but it's well worth a watch.
I tell you, the one that recently that sticks in my mind is Parasite. Have you seen Parasite?
It's on my list. Have you enjoyed it, did you?
Amazing.
Yeah, I know. I know all about the social class. And
I know some people do like the subtitle stuff, but I think you missed that. Come on.
What is it the director said, Bong Joon-ho, about, you know, a lot of people will miss out on films because of a couple of inches of text at the bottom of the screen, and it's like some fantastic films to be watched, isn't it? But yeah, Parasite, I've heard incredible things.
I would put it on like Joker level of kind of totally different and really brave, and just fantastic. Yeah. It didn't expect it at all, which probably made it more enjoying it. I was just like, what is this? And I've gone and watched a couple more of his other films, which are also like really incredible. It's kind of, I'm a big film fan as well, like watching the films and stuff, but never bothered with.
Well, he did was it Icebreaker? And what's the one where the train?
Snowpiercer.
That was on Netflix, wasn't it?
That's come on. Yeah, I haven't watched that yet, but I'm hopeful for that as well. That should be really good.
That was a decent film, that.
Really, really brave, really original. I think that's the thing. I love that. Like, here we are, 2020. It's hard to make something original. You know, a lot of things.
Yeah, remakes everywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah, and here's me pushing The Invisible Man.
It's a good one. It's a good one.
There is if anyone's interested, there's if you Google East Cleveland Arts Virtual Cinema, it's a bit of a mouthful.
Yeah.
But they're about to launch, and they're starting to do like online films with a chat afterwards, which you would normally pay for, so the BFI paid for ones. And you get the first two films free, and it's organised locally in our area, and it's for people to get together. And it was an idea that came out of lockdown, so people can still enjoy film and still connect over the joy, you know, chatting about film and the joy of what films can do and the conversations and so on.
Great.
And that's well worth a look in as well. So
yeah, I think I just shared that today on our Facebook.
Have you?
Well, yeah, check it on the Facebook.
Oh, brilliant.
But yeah, great idea. Really good. This is it's one of those
absolutely
things, positive to come out of it all. Right. Well, I've kept you long enough. It's been an absolute pleasure.
It's been great. Enjoyed it.
Speak to you, mate. And yeah, continue doing what you're doing. I think like Borough Man Can, guys, go and check that out, because I think it's really important to go and have access to that sort of conversations and information. And like you say, mentors, that, you know, there's people out there that have gone through, fortunately, some tragic stuff. And and but also fortunately they've come through it and they're actually sharing what what they've managed to do to get through it, and I think that's incredibly important.
And we're trying to counter the idea that somehow asking for help seems a weakness, or you know, when actually it's quite courageous. You know, it's sort of like to open to your vulnerabilities and seek support is actually the most courageous thing you can do. But to get comfortable with that, the happiest people in life are those that are comfortable with the vulnerabilities, and so that's it. Absolutely. And so, you know, if you want to be happy, get comfortable with your vulnerabilities.
Yeah, well, I'm watching at the moment is the SES Who Dares Win. I've never seen it fully, so we're watching it from the start, and probably some of the hardest men in the world are on that program, you know, and they're saying the exact same thing, you know, being aware of your weaknesses is what's made me strong. Like,
and there you go.
I think that's, if you can't appreciate that from those guys and what they've had to do to get where they've got, like, you'll never appreciate it. So if they can do it, they can own up and say, you know, I've had PTSD, I've had depression, and I've come through it and all that. I think you guys, anybody else listening out there, can do it as well.
Absolutely. Well said. We had a guy who's ex-Navy, and we've had a couple of guys on the show have been like tattooed, and you know, they fit the kind of lad thing perfectly, and then they start sharing their experiences and how they've come through it, and it's like, it challenges a lot of, it doesn't challenge me because obviously I'm exposed to this is why we do it, but I know a lot of people's reaction to it is often quite surprising.
Yeah.
We're edging slowly in that direction. I think that's a positive, huge positive. So massive. Long may it continue.
Yeah, fingers crossed, mate. That's super.
Good work you're doing, Marty. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Roddy. Brilliant. Thanks for your time, mate. That's great.
You're welcome.